Welcome to the New Books in Political Science podcast. My name is Heath Brown. Today I'll be talking with Matthew Corrigan, who's the author of Conservative Hurricane, How Jeb Bush Remade Florida. I hope that you enjoy this interview that I did with Matthew. Welcome back to the podcast. Again, we're talking today with Matthew Corrigan, who's the author of Conservative Hurricane, How Jeb Bush Remade Florida. Matthew, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Heath.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you on. Pleasure to talk about this interesting book and timely book for where we are in the campaign calendar. Before we get to the book, maybe you could tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, where you are, and maybe where you've been.
Sure. I'm chair and professor of political science at the University of North Florida. And North Florida's University of North Florida is in Jacksonville. And I've been here throughout my entire academic career, which is a little hard to believe. It's been 17 years now. And the interest behind the book and why I wrote the book is two of my areas are Florida politics and presidential politics. And so I must admit I couldn't see into the future. I didn't really know if Jeb Bush would consider running in 2016 when I started this about 3 or 4 years ago. But there was talk then, and I decided, you know, even if he didn't run for president, his governorship was really important to the state, and a book needed to be written about it.
Yeah, I guess if your last name is Bush, it's hard to avoid rumors about a future presidential run.
Sure.
So there's lots of Bush children out there who can start writing about just now, and it'll happen in 20 years from now. So let's talk about the book. You begin where most of the recent history of the Bush family begins. That is November 2000. I wonder if you would replay for us where the subject of your book, Jeb Bush, stood during that election. Where was he in November 2000?
Well, on election night, he was about 10 feet from George W. Bush because they had gathered in a hotel in Texas with the entire family to watch the results. And in Florida, we have, as everyone knows now, we have an unusual system for coordinating our elections. A lot of the responsibility is at the county level. So we have elected county supervisors of elections. And most of them run on a party label, which obviously makes very little sense, but you have, you know, Republicans and Democrats who run as the supervisor of elections for all the counties in Florida, or most of the counties in Florida. And then you do have a central place in Tallahassee where at the Department of State where they try to coordinate all of this. And so the governor's responsibility really isn't that important to elections, but it just so happened that the person who was the head of Department of State at the time for the state of Florida was Catherine Harris, who was a co-chair of George W. Bush's campaign. Mm-hmm. So, so clearly their emails, you know, going back and forth, but at the end of the day, it is hard to place the blame for that fiasco at the governor's office. It really, the whole system in the state was poor. People didn't know how to do a recount. And so, but at the end of the day, I think a lot of people outside Florida, match Jeb Bush with that episode. And so that's why I decided to start off the book with it.
Yeah, and you write just on that very point, that this is a, quote, an unfortunate consequence of history that so many people associate Jeb Bush with this situation. Why is it unfortunate? What do we miss out on understanding Jeb Bush? Sort of from a big picture, we'll get to the details later, but why is it an unfortunate consequence of history that we attach him so closely to this election in 2000?
Yeah, because his governorship was really important to the state, and I make the argument in the book he was the most powerful governor in Florida history, and you know whether you agreed with him or disagreed with him, he put together an agenda. He got that agenda passed through the legislature, and he was very involved in its implementation, and we don't see that in government much anymore, those three steps. And so I thought his legacy was a lot more important than that election, because that election was really about George W. Bush, not about Jeb Bush.
Yeah, and you also write that that Jeb Bush completely changed Florida politics. So I wonder, what was Florida like before Jeb Bush, And what did he do to change the state so completely?
Yeah, he brought in the first really unified Republican government in Florida since Reconstruction. And, you know, Florida is a weird mix. It has a very conservative political structure in terms of the South, and I'll get to that in a second. And it combines with, you know, a tremendous demographic upheaval that occurs in the state almost yearly because so many people come to our state from many places throughout the United States and many places throughout the world. And so you've got kind of this old structure that mixes with this ever-changing population, and that structure came from the Civil War, just like many other southern states, that after really the failed attempt at Reconstruction, we had a period known as Redemption, where white conservatives really took control of the state's politics again after the Civil War. And the one thing they could all agree upon is that they did not want a strong executive because of their experience with the federal government after the Civil War. And so the state constitution was written as a very weak executive. You didn't have a lieutenant governor. The governor was limited to one term. He had to share power with a large cabinet. There were many commissions put throughout the state that kind of diverted power from the governor's office. And so that started a pattern of really Florida governors not having a huge role in really the state's history or the state's direction. And, I mean, there are a couple of exceptions. And in 1968, a constitutional revision went through that gave some more power to the governor, but he still had to deal with a relatively large cabinet. And by that time, the state legislature was so entrenched in its power because they had no term limits, and you had a lot of Southern conservative Democrats who had been in the legislature forever, and then the legislature really, you know, ran the show. And so when Bush came in, and this goes through even important governors like Reuben Askew is a name many people probably know. He was an effective governor, but he got a lot of his things passed through the initiative, not through the legislature. And, you know, Leroy Collins in the 1950s is well known because he really stood up against segregation at the time, but he couldn't really accomplish a whole lot else because the legislature wouldn't let him do much. And so by the late 1990s, what occurred when Bush came in is he had the very fortunate timing of coming in when we had some state constitutional changes that shrunk the cabinet. He also was dealing with term limits on legislators, which is, you know, a major boom to gubernatorial power. And this was the first group that was going through the term limits. And also obviously with his name and his brother, who was even after the 1998, election was already being mentioned as a presidential candidate, really brought in all that power. He really had the run of the show in the state and really kind of shifted the power to the governor's office. And what he did with that is he implemented a very conservative agenda.
Yeah, and let's talk about that, because today Jeb Bush has been presented to us in some ways as a moderate, particularly in a field of potential conservative candidates for the presidency in 2016. But you describe him as an activist conservative and as a culture warrior. So what do we know about what Jeb Bush believes? How would you characterize his ideology?
Yeah, again, I think the book makes the strong argument it's conservative. It's not Tea Party conservative, but it's conservative. And the name of the book comes from the idea that, you know, the changes that we just talked about, Bush, you know, came in with and was really able to put together an agenda. And in Florida, obviously being a, you know, with a Southern Democratic history, you know, was conservative to begin with, but there wasn't a lot of action on some of those items. When Bush came into office, you know, he moved very quickly, and I think the Jeb Bush of 1999 would be completely amazed that in the year 2014 that he's being called a moderate, because he really made the point of showing his conservatism. And I think you can go back to his family history. You know, his father was often chided in Texas, and even when he became vice president and president, for not being conservative enough. George W. Bush in his congressional race in Texas, which he lost, really was kind of run out of the state, if you will, politically, until he ran again, by a Southern Democratic conservative who said, you know, W is not conservative enough. And I think Jeb learned from those lessons, and he made sure in the 1990s that he was identified as a conservative. When he first ran in 1994, and lost in a very close race in Florida, he called himself a head-banging conservative, and really made some statements during the campaign that you know, he wished he had back, and so in that race he was cast as the candidate on the far right, and he almost won, beating a sitting governor, Lawton Childs, who was also a United States Senator from Florida. So he ran a close race. 1998 comes along, and he doesn't really retreat from a lot of his positions, but his tone is a lot better. His tone is a lot more moderate. For example, in 1994, when he was asked, what are you going to do for African Americans, he said, probably nothing. By 1998, he had worked at a charter school, really founded a charter school in Liberty City, Miami, which is an urban area in Miami, and worked on some urban issues. And you know, realized that you know, he couldn't give off this tone, and actually won a bigger percentage of the African American vote in 1998. So with all of that, when he got elected, and his governorship started in 1999, he was ready with a conservative agenda, and he started right off, and I can just go over the social issues with you and the cultural issues. He called himself probably the most pro-life governor in the United States, and so a lot of these abortion restrictions and restrictions on abortion providers that we've seen kind of go through the United States, especially in the South, you know, Florida is one of the first places that did that, and that was under his leadership. He also ended affirmative action in the state by executive order, kind of trying to ward off a guy named Ward Connerly, who was trying to put an initiative on the ballot, and the Bush people didn't want that initiative on the ballot during the presidential election. So he basically ended affirmative action in the state by executive order. He replaced it with another policy outcome, but he had not really consulted with the African-American leaders in the state. And there was a march on Tallahassee after he took that action. The famous or the infamous Terry Schiavo case, where he challenged the court's authority to deal with or to allow the woman's family, Terry Schiavo, her husband, to cut off her nutrition because she was in the end of life situation, and really kind of challenged the courts at that point. That became a national drama. The Florida legislature passed a bill trying to protect Terry Schiavo. The United States Congress passed a bill. The President George W. Bush flew home from Texas to Washington in the middle of the night to sign that legislation. And at the end of the day, the courts all said the same thing, that the husband had the legal authority to do that. And Bush challenged that to the very, very end. So there's a lot of these examples where Bush put together a very socially conservative agenda, including gun rights. Again, a lot of these pieces of legislation you're seeing around the country now about the expansion of rights for concealed weapon holders, and of course the infamous Stand Your Ground legislation started in Florida and started under Jeb Bush. So all of that put together, in my mind, is a very conservative social and cultural agenda.
Now, what has he been doing since? You know, this is one of the pitfalls of the governor position that he held, that it was a single term. What has he been doing since he left that position?
No, he served for two terms because.
For two terms.
Yeah, because by in that 1968 revision, they allowed the governor to serve two terms. But the since then, he has been very active in his educational foundation, and he's got a national educational foundation, a state educational foundation. And this is not just merely a speaker's bureau. I mean, he's getting funding from some of the big book publishers, some online educators and education groups who have a kind of a vested interest in educational outcomes. And, you know, he's had in one of these foundations, at one time there's a staff of 30. So he's got, you know, researchers and I assume speechwriters and things like that. And really in the state of Florida, the last chapter in the book calls him the shadow governor because he's really maintained a lot of his influence in the state. And some argued he even named the education commissioner a couple of years ago that it was really his candidate, not Rick Scott's candidate. So what he's done with this education issue is really kept his name out there and really kind of allowed him to stay involved in the policy argument. Now, obviously, the testing under a lot of his proposals has become very controversial and then kind of brought into the umbrella called the Common Core, which many other states have adopted. So I look at that in two ways. Number one, it's an incredible policy achievement that what started in Florida has gone out to other states. And two, it's obviously a danger point if he decides to run for president because it's become very unpopular. But you've got to keep in mind that testing is only part of it. Testing is the trigger to the policy outcomes. And the policy outcomes are to increase school choice. And for example, since you know his time as governor, we have now in Florida over 220,000 students in charter schools. We have 80,000 students in what they call corporate tax scholarships that attend private schools. So there's lots of choice options in the state, and my city of Jacksonville, a study just came out that said 40% of public school students do not go to their neighborhood school. They do some choice option, whether it's you know public school choice or take a corporate tax scholarship. So that's again an example of a policy that's been implemented. And I think if he does run for president, he'll basically say, well, we can talk about testing, and then there's probably too much testing, but at the end of the day, we want to increase choice. And I think some conservative groups will buy that argument because part of that increasing choice will be to take on the teachers' unions, which have not been a friend of Jeb Bush's here in Florida. And I think that probably gets him some conservative credentials there.
So you've alluded to the potential of a run. You probably don't know whether or not he's going to run, and if you did know, you probably wouldn't tell us. But maybe you could just offer some thoughts about the viability of a potential 2016 campaign. Talk to us about where we are now, where you think his livelihood might be for the 2016 election.
Yeah, I have no inside information. He did not agree to an interview for the book, but all the evidence that I've looked at, I think, leans towards a run. And the reason is that I'm not sure why he would be doing the things that he's been doing the last couple of months if he wasn't seriously considering it. As we're speaking here in November, I believe he's got he just accepted to be the graduation speaker at the University of South Carolina, and he's going to go campaign for the Republican candidate in the Senate runoff in Louisiana. And he just had a huge educational meeting in Washington where he talked about his educational reform efforts. So to me, all that points to, you know, that he's seriously considering it. And when his brother, W. Bush, said that, you know, it's 50-50, but he's not afraid to fail, to me that was a big statement, because I think the question of whether Jeb Bush runs and whether he wins are two very different questions. Because I think it's very hard to predict who's going to win on the Republican side. I mean, there's so many possible alternatives and scenarios. But the question is, in my mind, is I think he's probably would like to debate, you know, educational testing, and would like to debate immigration reform and so forth. I don't think he's scared of that at all. I think it probably comes down to a personal decision, and probably one where you think, you know, I might not win if I run. And so when W. Bush said he wasn't afraid to fail, to me that gave some indication that, you know, that Jeb Bush is really thinking about this, because I don't think there are any guarantees if he runs, but everything that he's been doing for the last month seems to indicate that that's what he wants to do.
Yeah, Matthew Corkin's book is Conservative Hurricane, How Jeb Bush Remade Florida, published this year by University Press of Florida. Matthew, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Heath. I enjoyed it.